Pleasure to introduce our speaker for tonight, Cora from Orchid.
Hi, everybody. I'm Cora. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Cora.
Hi, everybody. This is real. Last time I was here, the podium was over there, and you guys have just done such a beautiful job with this place, and I love looking around. I love over there seeing activities and road trips and the sobriety capital of the world and just all of it. I mean, it's what I needed when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Is I needed fellowship, and it really feels like that there's fellowship in this group, and I love that. So let me get this out of the way. Let's see. I am Cora, I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date. It is July 21st of 2003. It's not my first sobriety date, but hopefully it's my last, you know, God willing, and God's always willing. It would just be me that screwed it up. So hopefully it's my last sobriety date. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. I have sponsees who sponsor. So it's just the nice little sandwich, the cookie, you know, and I love it. That's how Alcoholics Anonymous works. I have a home group. My home group is Just the Black Print. It meets on Monday nights in Santa Barbara. It's a big book study. And I have a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just brought my first big book tonight because I thought it would be fun to bring. But this is my first one. It's a third edition. It's got coffee stains on it. Like, I love the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I study the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but unfortunately I can't quote the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous because it's just not there. But I do love it. And as a matter of fact, I want to encourage everyone, if you don't have a big book, that's the way to go. This is the blueprint to our recovery, and study it, because that's what I've done, and it's worked out well for me. And there's a lot of good stuff in here. You know, one of my favorite lines, though, it comes out of another piece of AA literature, and that is the 12 and 12. And that line is not, I'm not going to quote it exactly because, again, don't always remember things right, but something to the effect of, not by circumstances, not by virtue, but by circumstances, I found myself in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's definitely how it is for me. It wasn't by virtue that I got here. It wasn't because that I was so awesome and so cool and made such good decisions that I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. That wasn't it. It was the circumstances that what had happened in my life. My circumstances were, you know, they were pretty dark. You know, I didn't have any friends. I didn't have a home. I was living on the streets. And I was just a mess, you know, and that's where my alcoholism took me. And so, when I say that, it's like, I'm an alcoholic because I drink alcohol. And, you know, the thing is that there might be some people that are like predispositioned to be an alcoholic, but in order to be an alcoholic, you actually have to drink alcohol. And so I became an alcoholic when I drank alcohol, and I needed a drink long before I actually did. But I wasn't an alcoholic then. I was just tweaky, right? I was just weird. I was just uncomfortable. I was awkward. I was uncomfortable in my own skin. I was always trying to scratch this freckle off my finger. I was always trying to scratch the freckles off my nose. I was always pulling the hair out of my head. I was just a tweaky, tweaky little kid. I was uncomfortable, but I wasn't an alcoholic. I didn't become an alcoholic until I actually drank alcohol. And what makes... Also, what makes me an alcoholic is that I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows. You know, there's a lot of people that have a lot of other things that are going on, and they're not alcoholics, but you know, they could be. But lucky for me, I have a solution. I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows, and I have an allergy to alcohol. And you know, what that means to me is that you know, it's an allergy because it never goes away. It's an allergy because I'm always going to have it. Like, I might, you know, there are people out there that are allergic to nuts, strawberries, bumblebees, antibiotics, and it's never going to go away. 99.9% of the time, it's never going to go away. And that's how my alcoholism is. It's never, ever going to go away. And so that's me being bodily different. And the part about me being mentally different is the fact that, you know, the people that are allergic to peanut butter and bees and strawberries and nuts, they're staying away. Right? But not me. Like, that's the mental part, right? I am going to go after that alcohol. I'm going to consume as much as I possibly can. That's what I do. If I get alcohol into my system, I'm going for it. I'm going for it 100%. And, you know, Like I said, I was a tweaky little kid, and when I moved back to California, I started hanging out with my cousin, who is 3 years older than I was. And so when I moved back, I was in probably like the fourth grade, gonna go into the fifth grade. So I started hanging out with my cousin. She was 3 years older than I was, and her boyfriend was 3 years older than she was. And he taught me a great little trick. He taught me that if I go into a grocery store with a paper bag that's empty but rolled up, like it looks like something's in it, I can walk out with alcohol and no one's gonna bother me. And that's what I did. So I was that little kid, because no one's gonna think a little kid that's gonna, you know, walking in with an empty bag is gonna walk out with alcohol, but that's what I did. And I did that, and that changed my life. Like, first, I was able to drink a little bit of that alcohol. I was hanging out with these older kids. And I certainly didn't drink every day from that point on, but it definitely started the obsession. Like, I started, you know, thinking about it a little bit more often. And my alcoholism, it advanced fairly quickly. You know, I went from the fourth grade and they skipped me up to the fifth grade. So then I was in the fifth grade, and I was already doing the drinking. I was already, you know, because I knew how to do it. I didn't have to stand outside of liquor stores or grocery stores and ask somebody to go in and buy me alcohol. I would just go in and steal. So then that's how it worked out for me. So there I was in the fifth grade, and I was still awkward and weird. I was that funky little kid because I was smoking, I was drinking, I was in a Christian school by this time, and all the little students, all the other kids in the class would go, "It smells like smoke in here." And I knew that they were talking about me. I knew it was like me. And so I didn't quite fit in at that Christian school. But I wasn't gonna stop doing what I was doing, you know? And again, like, I wasn't doing it every day, but I was doing it as often as I could. And so, that's kind of just how it went for me, you know? I was already bodily and mentally different from my fellows. I was already, when I ingested alcohol, I couldn't stop drinking. And we're gonna fast forward it a little bit to when I first was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I was first introduced, my life had, you know, clearly it was funky and it was bad and I was drinking a lot. My mother decided that she kind of found out that I was drinking because I couldn't really hide it anymore. You know, you can hide it for so long, and I couldn't really hide it anymore. And so she decided that she was going to put me in Raleigh Hills. Now, I don't know if, I feel like you guys probably know what Raleigh Hills is, but it was aversion therapy. So they basically give you a shot of some sort of medication. They sit you in front of a big mirror. They give you a big silver bowl. They feed you a bunch of alcohol, and then you just throw up in the bowl. That's aversion therapy. So that's what they did to me. That's where I went. And I was actually, you know, okay with that. It wasn't, because alcohol wasn't my problem. It was your problem. You guys had a problem with my alcoholism. And I just needed to get through this little 28-day thing with a couple day follow-ups, right? Because that's what they did. You come to this 28-day program, and then you have a couple 2-day follow-ups. And so I just needed to get through that, and then I just needed to be able to drink. And also during that time, you know, after I went to the 28 days and I was doing the 2-day follow-ups, which happened, I don't remember how often it happened, I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went into that meeting, and I looked around at the people that were in that meeting, and they were all like my age now or older. Many of them were older, but there was this one guy that was sitting in there, and he was, he was a transient, he was a bum, he was living on the streets, he had two pairs of clothes that were... He would just alternate inside and outside. He had messy hair. He wasn't very coherent when he spoke. And I looked at him and I thought, well, that's an alcoholic, right? If I ever get like that, then I'll come and I'll be serious about it. But I'm not there. I don't need this thing. And that's what was going on in my mind. I didn't need Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't that guy that was that transient, that was living on the streets. That wasn't me. So, my alcoholism was still your problem and not my problem. And that was basically my first introduction to alcohol, Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I said, by this time, I am still kind of hiding my drinking because I have to go back to these 2-day follow-ups. Because quite frankly, I was a really good barfer. Like, I could projectile barf, I could barf, nothing, it didn't bother me to barf. So doing that whole thing with aversion therapy didn't really make a difference to me because I could barf on cue. So that's what it was. So I was hiding my drinking, I'm living at home with my mother, but I'm hiding my drinking, and it gets to the point where you know, I can't really hide my drinking anymore. And so I just sort of stopped coming home. You know, I just sort of stopped showing up. You know, quite frankly, from the time I was 15 until the time I actually got sober the very first time, my mom probably only saw me half the time. You know, the first time I got sober, it was a couple weeks before my 19th birthday. So she probably only saw me half that time because I was never home. I couldn't go home because I was out and I was drinking. And once I drink, I can't control how much I'm going to drink. I can't control what I'm going to do or where I'm going to go or who I'm going to see or what's going to happen next. So I wasn't going home. I also picked up a couple bad habits during that time. And I started going down to LA and I started walking the streets of LA and I started sleeping with people I didn't know to make money that I didn't have to buy the alcohol and the drugs that I needed. And that was sort of what I was doing. And I was going back and forth to LA, back and forth to LA, to Santa Barbara to LA, Santa Barbara to LA. And that was sort of my life for a little while. And at one point I was back in Santa Barbara and I was having a little conflict with this guy. And so I went into his house and I just absolutely, he wasn't there and I just destroyed the house. I did a whole bunch of vandalism to it. I just, in a drunken stupor, because that's kind of also what I do when I am drinking. I don't even have control what I do. I barely even remembered it, except what I do remember is I got arrested on the last room. So I went to juvenile hall at that point. And they released me into my mom's care because, again, I was a minor. And everything was going well. I had an attorney and everything was going well. They were just going to basically stop, you know, they were just going to basically let me go. Maybe a little bit of probation, maybe let me go. And that was that. But, you know, it talks about it in the big book, you know, when the... And again, I read this, I swear to God, I read this thing and I study this thing, but I can't tell you exactly what it says. But there's something in this big book that says that, you know, that we might have the best reasons to stay sober. And we might have an important, or some, you know, this guy had the important date coming up. He had something that he had to go to. It was a super important date. And he went out the night before and he drank and he missed his appointment. And that's kind of what happened to me, right? I was going to be going to court the very next day. And what did I do? I went out and I got in a hit and run DUI. And that wasn't my intention, right? I wanted this court thing to go away. I did. But what happened was, is I went out with my friends. I had a little bit of alcohol. And then because I am an alcoholic, I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows. I take a little bit of alcohol and then I can't control how much I'm going to do, how much I'm going to drink, and what I'm going to do afterwards. So I got in that hit and run DUI. And went back to juvenile hall. And while I was in there, they gave me an option. They said, well, you can either go to this juvenile camp up here in the hills, or you can go into Casa Serena. Casa Serena is a women's recovery home in Santa Barbara. And of course I picked Casa Serena. And that place, it really changed my life. Like I went into Casa Serena and they had, the people in there were going to meetings. They were working. You know, when I went there, there was 21 women in the house. You'd stay for a year. They would take you to meetings every night. They would, you know, you'd work the 12 steps. You'd have a sponsor, and so that's what I did. I went into that house, and I met a bunch of people, and I saw what Alcoholics Anonymous was. Like I would look at people in the eye, and I could see that they had the lights on, and I could see that this thing called sobriety was making a difference in their lives. But it wasn't for me still, because again, you know, it's your problem and not my problem. I was kind of coming around to the fact that maybe I had a problem, but I still wasn't quite there yet. So I'm doing this Casa Serena thing. I'm kind of one foot in, one foot out, and I actually went and got a DUI on a weekend pass. They asked me to leave for a little while. I came back, and it was starting to hit home. I was starting to get a little bit more uncomfortable, it wasn't happening for me anymore. Alcohol wasn't doing for me what it had done for me before, and I was starting to kind of clue in. But, you know, I wasn't doing the work, right? I was watching everybody else doing the work. I was watching everybody else work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was watching everybody else go to meetings with their sponsor, and I was just going to the meetings and, you know, kidding around, right? So when I left Casa Serena, I moved out and I moved into this hotel that I thought it was kind of a step up, but it was a hotel that was in Santa Barbara way back then. I think it was called the Californian Hotel, and it was like one of those hotels that had like a bathroom at the end of the hall. And, you know, and the floors were, you'd stick to them when you walk, you know. It was one of those kinds of things. So I moved into there thinking that it was a step up, right? I'm moving out of Casa. I'm going to move into my own deal here, and I'm moving into this hotel. And that didn't last long before I was back down in L.A., doing what I was doing, sleeping with people I didn't know, making money I didn't have for the drugs and alcohol that I needed to survive. And that was my life. And I did that. But at this point, I did have a head full of AA. And so at this point, it sort of started to hit me that, you know what, this isn't going to work out for me. I got to do something. I got to do something different. And, you know, when I went back down to L.A., when I went back down to L.A., it was New Year's Eve. And my first sobriety date was January 9th. So it didn't take me long. Like, it didn't take me long to just hit the wall. I just couldn't do it anymore. And so while I was down there and I was, you know, in this hotel room in Silver Lake, you know, doing drugs that I didn't like to do with some guy that was kind of sleazy, and he, you know, was all out of those drugs and the liquor was gone, and I'm just like, I'm out. So I left and I started walking down Sunset Boulevard, and I just remember everything to this day. I can remember everything today like it was that night. I just remember seeing every single thing crystal clear in my head. I can see it as clear today as I did back then. And I got back down to Hollywood, and I reached out to a friend of mine that I had gone to Casa Serena with, and she was now living down in Dana Point. And I said, can you help me? Can you come and pick me up? And she said, yeah, go ahead and meet me at the French Marketplace. And I said, okay. So, you know, it was my job to get from where I was on Sunset over to the French Marketplace. So I hitched a ride with some guys, and I was, you know, in the car with these guys, and they, you know, had alcohol. So I was drinking alcohol because, again, I'm coming off that drug that I didn't like, you know. So I'm drinking the alcohol, and I'm just starting to feel a lot better. It's starting to resonate. I'm starting to, you know, feel good in my own skin, as good as I can be. And they said, you know what, let's go to Venice. Let's go to Venice and party. And I'm like, you know, the kind of girl that I am, I'm like, oh yeah, let's go to Venice and let's party, right? But something happened. And this is the first divine intervention that happened for me is what came out of my mouth was I said, no, I have to go meet a friend. And I actually made it over there. And I wouldn't say that. This girl that likes to drink and do drugs and likes to party and likes to, you know, leave her mind, wouldn't say that. And that's what came out of my mouth. And I went and I met my friend, and she, you know, I slept on her couch for a few days. I detoxed on her couch. I shook on her couch. I threw up. I, you know, did the whole thing. And then, you know, after a few days, she drove me back up to Santa Barbara. And, you know, that's when my first run of sobriety began, was January 9th, of 1987. That was my first sobriety date. And I say that because I just want to let everybody know that it's so much easier to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous than it is to get here. I stayed for a number of years, and I'll continue with my story, but it didn't stick. But at any rate, also during that whole time, my mother told me at that time that this the guy that I thought was my father wasn't my father. And she told me that because I was drinking so heavily at the time, and the guy that I thought was my father, the cool Italian guy, he, you know, died from alcoholism, from cirrhosis of the liver, when he was like in his 30s. And my mom thought that I was just trying to follow in his footsteps. So she said to me, you know what, that guy's not really your father. This guy's your father. And she introduced me to this other guy. And this other guy, you know, he wasn't, like, I wasn't impressed. He was fat and greasy and loud, and I was just like not having it. But that was it. So we didn't really connect. We didn't really go far. But so then I come here, or I come to Santa Barbara. I start going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I start doing everything that's suggested. I get a sponsor. I read the big book. I'm doing the steps. I'm doing steps 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm just doing them all. And I'm loving it. And I'm doing the fellowship, right? The fellowship is amazing. There's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the book, and then there's the fellowship, which is the meetings and the road trips and hearing the speakers that you like and the sobriety capital, like all that, the fellowship. All of us gathered here is fabulous. This is fellowship. And I couldn't get sober without it, right? It's a huge part of my recovery. But I was doing the deal. I was working the steps. I was going to dances. You know, the only thing that I wasn't doing that first bout of sobriety was I wasn't really sponsoring people. I didn't really sponsor people. But what I did do is I really got involved with general service. And I love general service. I think, you know, I was really active in general service back then. You know, I started out as an alternate GSR, and then I became a GSR, and then I became the DCM, and then I became the area literature chair. And all that stuff is really, really important to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I learned the importance of it at that time. And I was hot for service, and I was really doing the thing. And, you know, so I think it's really important. So when your GSR gets up here and makes an announcement or a report, does a report, so important to pay attention. It's easy not to. It's easy to just chuckle in the back and play with your friends and everything. But that is such an important part of Alcoholics Anonymous, is that level of service, you know. Like, we have the Plain Language Big Book that has come out. That's, you know, that's brand new. And that started like 7 years ago. But if you didn't have a GSR, you didn't know about it until just now, right? So it's important stuff. And that's how, you know, these meetings get the message from New York. So I was really active, and I was still doing the deal. Very, very active in service work. And then something just, you know, something... I was still doing it. You know, I was still doing it. Life was good. I was still going to meetings. And, you know, a few things happened during that time of my sobriety. I would think I was about maybe 19 or 20 years old, and I got pregnant, and I thought that I wasn't actually going to carry the baby full term, because I had had a couple miscarriages in the past. And along about 4 months, I thought, uh-oh, I'm still pregnant. I think this is happening. And I started to get really afraid, and I started to get really scared, and I told my family that I was going to put this little baby up for adoption, and they all said, no, don't do that, don't do that, we'll help you. And I said, okay, because I'm like 19, right, 19, 20 years old, okay, you'll help me. And as the time grew closer, I knew that I was not prepared for this, and I knew it wasn't the kind of life that I would want to give a little child. So at that point, I decided to start looking into adoption lawyers, and I found one, and I picked some parents, and I was about a month early when I gave birth. Nobody else knew that I had made this decision. I kept it a secret. I kept it to myself. So when I went in, when my water broke, I went in, I took a taxi. I took a taxi to the hospital, went in, I delivered. There was a couple complications. But the baby was fine. The family came, they picked up the baby, they took the baby, and off they went. And then I had to go back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to go back to the father, and I had to tell him what I had done. And it was one of the most painful parts of my recovery. And it was painful not because I did that, because to this day, I know that it was the best decision that I could have ever made. But the way that I went about it, I wish that I had done it differently. I wish that I had actually been more forthcoming. I wish I had talked to the father. I wish we could have, you know, made the decision together. And that was an amends that I had to make to him. And so that's the kind of the one thing that I'm not necessarily proud of about my sobriety and about my recovery, because if you stay sober long enough, you're going to do a lot of things that you're not proud of and that you're uncomfortable with, and they just, you know, but we don't have to drink over and use over it. And that's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous, is that we can make huge mistakes and we can do things that are questionable, but as long as we, you know, do the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, do the steps, work with the sponsor, pray to our higher power, we can get through whatever it is that happened. So that was kind of a big deal that happened to me in my early recovery on the first time around. And the next thing that was sort of a big deal too was that one day I was sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I said, hi, my name's Corin, I'm an alcoholic. And I see this head pop up from across the room, and it's that greasy, fat, loud guy. That was my dad, right? So my dad popped up, and I just went, oh, no. And as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, and as a result of him working a program and me working a program, I got to be with that guy and love that guy and know that guy until the day he actually died. And he died sober, and I got to know him and love him. And we worked together at nights at a little kiosk, so we really got to bond and connect. And that was just one of the biggest gifts of Alcoholics Anonymous. because that wouldn't have happened, you know, that would not have happened unless I had the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the other thing, when I started coming into the rooms and I was serious, you know, and I was seriously doing it because I knew now that I was bodily and mentally different, and I knew that I couldn't do it on my own, and I knew that I needed Alcoholics Anonymous if I was going to have any type of recovery or sobriety at all. I started coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that guy that I had talked about when I was first coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, that bum, that one that was like switching his clothes in and out, was smelly, couldn't put in a full sentence, he was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was Tim Whitman. And he was my Eskimo. He didn't know it at the time, and that's what's so important. He didn't know it at the time that he was my Eskimo, but I looked at him, and he was probably 4 or 5 years sober at this point, and he was a fine example of Alcoholics Anonymous. He had clean clothes, he was clean shaven, he was literate, he was talking the thing, you could tell people liked him, he was doing the sponsor thing. And he was my first Eskimo, and what that shows me today is that we never know who's watching. That guy was literally my Eskimo, and he had no idea who I was. He didn't know my name until, you know, a little while longer, right? But we never know who's gonna, we don't know who we're gonna impact. Just by sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't know who's watching, right? Somebody's watching, and we don't know. We might just have that impact on somebody's life, and they come up to us a few years later and say, you were my Eskimo. So that was pretty amazing, you know, when I looked at those things. And those were all pretty big deals for me in my recovery. And I just, like I said, I just did this thing. And, I've been sober. It didn't stick, right? Like I said, it didn't stick. But I've been sober more of my life than I was drinking or using. So what happened to me was, you know, I'm doing the deal. I'm showing up. I'm showing up to meetings. Maybe sometimes I'm showing up a little late, you know. I'm not really taking on any commitments anymore, but I'm still going. I'm still fellowshipping, right? I'm still doing that. My integrity starts to slip just a little bit, you know. Maybe I'm not showing up to work on time, or maybe I'm not staying the whole time. But I'm feeling really good, right? Because I'm doing three high impact aerobic classes a day. I'm running 3 miles a day. I'm doing the stadiums at City College, which if you know those stadiums, they're gnarly. So I'm doing those, and I'm feeling good, I'm feeling healthy, right? But my integrity's slipping just a little bit. And so what happened, probably about maybe 11 years of sobriety, I guess, is I hurt my back. And when I hurt my back, I was prescribed Vicodin. And I call it Vicahol, because for me, it has the same symptoms as alcohol, right? I call it Vicahol. And so I didn't take it. I was like, nope, anything that affects me from the head up, I'm not taking it. Didn't take it. Didn't tell anybody either. And after a couple weeks, you know, I was in pain. And I didn't want to stop my 3 high-impact aerobic classes a day. I didn't want to stop running. I didn't want to stop doing the stadiums. By this time, my integrity had waned a little bit. I wasn't going to as many meetings. I didn't have any commitments. So it was easy at that point to just go ahead and pop those pills. And I didn't tell anybody. Like, I kept it a secret. I wasn't going to tell anybody, right? I'm not going to tell anybody. And it didn't take more than 2 days before I was in the grips of alcoholism again, before I was in the grips of addiction again, before, you know, once again, once I started taking those pills, I couldn't. It was the same effect. It was the same effect as alcohol. It took me out. It took me out for probably 3 or 4 years. I don't know. I haven't really done the math. Probably around 4 years. It took me out for about 4 years. I never drank because I knew I couldn't drink. I knew I was an alcoholic. You know, I knew I couldn't drink. Knew I couldn't do heroin. Knew I couldn't do coke. Knew I couldn't do those things. But hey, you know what? These pills, okay. And so what happened was is that I started taking those pills and I stopped going to meetings altogether. And this is really interesting because people talk, you know, people talk. And so it came to me, I got wind that somebody had talked about me, and that gave me fuel. Well, those people, they should come directly to me, right? And I'm not condoning or judging anybody or anything, but if you're ever worried about somebody, if you're ever worried about somebody in their recovery, go to them, right? I don't know if it would have made a difference if anybody came to me. I don't know if I would have gotten, oh, you're right. I don't know if it would have made a difference at all. But I think it's so important that we just talk to people that we love, talk to people that we care about. If there is a concern about somebody's recovery, talk to them, not behind their back, not to other people, go right to the source and just open up and talk to them. But anyway, I was out and I was taking a bunch of pills, and unfortunately my morality wanes a little bit when I'm taking pills, and I started forging prescriptions. I was working at the hospital, so I started forging prescriptions. I was taking, because I couldn't just deal with the doctor and what they were prescribing. So I had the whole thing. You know, I had multiple doctors, multiple prescriptions, taking a boatload of pills. If I didn't have pills, I was taking trips down to Mexico and getting pills down there and making my way back. And that was my life. And I was very lonely. And I was very to myself, and when I would just have a conversation with you, I wasn't really present. I wasn't really having a conversation with you, because I was back here thinking about which pharmacy do I need to go to, which doctor have I done, where am I going to get my next bottle of pills. Like, the obsession was is exact same, you know. I have to stay away from anything that affects me from the neck up. And what happened was, divine intervention, I got arrested. So that's what happened. I got arrested. And the way that story goes is, so this is my second time sober, right? So now I'm not there yet, though. So I am needing these pills. I'm taking a whole bunch of pills, you know, each and every day. I can't stop. Nobody really knows how many I'm doing. I'm hiding prescriptions. Like, I have written prescriptions. I'm hiding them behind pictures in the wall. You know, like, I'm doing all that stuff. You know, people hide their bottles, and I was hiding my prescriptions behind frames in the wall. And just crazy insanity. That's insanity, right? So one day I'm dropping off a prescription on my way to lunch. And I'm coming back from my lunch, and I'm sitting at the off ramp waiting for the light to change, and I see these two cops just barrel past me, and I'm like, oh, I bet they're after me. I know they're after me. And that's what went on in my head. And then I went to the pharmacy, and you know, there are the two cop cars, and I'm just sitting, I know they're after me. And because I had to have my pills, like, that there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I had to go into that pharmacy. I had to walk into that pharmacy. And as I'm walking into that pharmacy, I hear the cops behind me going, ma'am. And I'm like, oh. And the gig was up. So they arrested me. They took me in. I got released the next day. I went back to work. And still taking pills. I call my friend in Alcoholics Anonymous that had been through something really similar. And that's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous, is that we get to talk in these rooms. We get to have these discussion meetings where we get to hear other people's stories, where we can make those connections with other people. And when, if you're going through something and I'm gonna go through something, then we can make that connection. And so I knew this woman, I knew her. She was from the very first time that I got sober. We went through Casa Serena together. She had her sobriety. She went out on pills. I called her up because she was sober again. I called her up. So she came to see me at my job, and she looked at me and she said, you know what, Cora, you need to go into rehab. You need to go into rehab right now, today. And I'm like, oh, you know, I kind of got things to do. I don't know if that's going to work for me. And she said, no, you need to go today, because you may never get this chance again. And those were the words that I heard. Those were the divine intervention words that I heard that hit me like a lead brick. And, for whatever reason, I was able to hear that, and I was able to take action on that. And then that's when my sobriety began. I was able to go into rehab. It wasn't like your 28-day, they didn't torture you and make you vomit, you know, but it was one of those things. It was CRC, and I went into CRC, and I got to, you know, do that whole program. And the beautiful part about it is that when I came back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, people didn't judge me. People didn't shame me. People didn't look at me weird. People welcomed me with open arms, because that's what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous, is that we welcome people no matter how many times they've come back into the rooms, no matter how many times they're in or out or anything. We welcome people with open arms. And they told me in the very beginning that you have to be nice to the newcomer because they might be your sponsor one day. And, you know, and so, you know, I came back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I felt nothing but love and acceptance. And people just wrapped themselves around me, and I was able to once again start my road of recovery. And so when I say it's a lot easier to stay here than it is to get here, that's because of my experience. Because when I was out there for those 4 years, I wanted nothing more to be back in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted nothing more than to be sober again, clear-headed again, living a good life again, having friends again. I wanted nothing more than having that. But I couldn't because I'm a drug addict and I'm an alcoholic. And if I put anything into my body, I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows. And that's where I'm going to go with it. And so if I would have just stayed, you know, I wouldn't have had to come back. So thankfully for me, I was able to come back because there's a lot of people that never make it back. And that's the sad, hard, real truth about it. There's a lot of people that never make it back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So once again, I started doing the deal, and it was wonderful. And there were a couple little turning points in my sobriety, because I came back in and I started doing the deal, showing up, hitting meetings, and I got a sponsor that I had known from before, and she was a good sponsor then, and so she would be a good sponsor now. And while I was out there before, I was taking so many pills that I was also having seizures. And so they took my driver's license away. So when I came back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't drive. Except I was, right? I was driving. And my sponsor at the time, Teresa, she said to me, you know, Cora, if you continue to drive, I'm not going to sponsor you anymore. And that was another one of those God shots. Because again, I'm like, I'm going to drive. You know, I got things to do, places to go, people to see. It's important. I need my car, you know? That's who I am. And for whatever reason, I heard her, and it was more important for me to do whatever it took to stay sober than it did to drive. Because I know what it's like when your integrity starts to wane just a little bit. It's just a little bit. It's just one meeting I'm not going to. It's just one commitment I'm not going to, you know, go to. I'm just going to get someone else to cover that commitment for me. You know, I'm only a little bit late for work, you know, just those little things, they start to add up. And the next thing, you know, your sobriety's at risk. So I didn't want driving to take my sobriety away. And I thought that's where it could go. If I continued to drive, she wasn't going to sponsor me. If she wasn't going to sponsor me, that was it. So that was a fork. And thankfully, I don't know, because if I decided that I was going to drive and I didn't take that as an option, I may not be standing here today. So I went ahead and did that, and I stopped driving, and I had to humble myself, and I had to start getting rides from other people. And I'm not one that asks for help, right? I'm the one that helps. That's probably a lot of what took me out. You know, there's another part. I love the 12 and 12, and there's another part in the 12 and 12 that it talks about the roadblocks to recovery. And I can't remember what they are, but one of them is self-sufficiency. And self-sufficiency will get me every time. If I can do it myself, I will. If I don't have to ask you for help, I won't. Because I don't need you, right? And so that's one of the things that not driving did for me. I had to reach out to other people. I had to be asked for help. I had to ask for rides. And people were more than happy to give me rides. People love giving rides. And so that's the place that I got in. I got rides. Eventually, I got my driver's license back. And then eventually, I was giving rides to people again. But that's one of the things that I had to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous, was I had to learn how not to be okay all the time, how to be able to be ask for help, how to reach out and say, you know what, I'm not doing that good. I really need some help. Because when I went out the first time, I was good. I was running. I was doing my aerobic, you know, classes. Everything was great. And I wasn't letting anybody know that I was actually in pain and I could barely walk. You know, I didn't want to give anything up. I didn't want to let you know that I wasn't doing well. You know, I had that secret. Right. And so that's been part of my recovery, is to not be so darn self-sufficient that I can't ask somebody for help. So there was another significant thing that happened this time in my recovery. And what that was that little girl that I had put up for adoption. She reached out to me on Facebook and she said, I don't know if you know who I am. And I had known who she was, because I actually had been stalking her this whole time, because Santa Barbara is a small town, and I, you know, worked at Cottage Hospital, and so, I mean, I could get arrested for the things I'm talking now, but anyway, I was sort of stalking her. I knew where she went, and this is the funniest, weirdest, oddest thing, how, you know, God works in our lives, because it turned out that she actually, so it sounds bad when I say I was stalking her, but it's kind of what it was. But what happened was, is my sponsor at the time, her son was best friends with my daughter.
Oh.
Right? So that was crazy. And so I would go to my sponsor's, like, you know, 20th birthday or whatever it was at the time, and I would from afar get to watch her, right, playing with her son. Wow. I would go, you know, I would go with my sponsor to her son's plays, because he was in the plays at Santa Barbara High. She was also in the plays at Santa Barbara High, and I got to watch her. So kind of stalking, but, you know, I knew that she was doing well, and it made me happy, and it made me joyous. But when she said, I don't know if you know who I am, I said, I absolutely do know who you are. And so we got to meet, and it was heartwarming, and it was wonderful. And I, you know, and we still talk. I've got to, you know, watch her, you know, I got to go to her wedding, you know, and when I went to her birthday, I got to go to her birthday, and all her family came from New York. All her family came from Boston. They rented out a big gigantic restaurant in Santa Barbara, Harry's. They rented out Harry's. So they filled up Harry's, and I went to that birthday, and all of her family would come up to me and thank me so much for the wonderful gift that I had given them. And it just, I knew before that I had made the right decision, but it just made me so grateful that she grew up with so much love and surrounded by so many people that loved and cared about her. And it just made me know, I knew I did the right thing. I always knew, but this was like the bow. This was the cherry on top, and it was such a great experience. And since I've met her then, you know, like I said, I've been to her wedding. I've been to other events that she's had. I've been able to watch her husband when he, you know, lost his job with NASA, and they had to go through that whole thing, and he got another job. I get to watch her when they buy their house. Like, I get to have this relationship with her. And that never would have happened. That definitely, in God's timing, is amazing. Because had she come into my life when I was out for those 4 years, I don't know what would have happened. You know, I don't know if I would have been too scared. I don't know if I would have, you know, I don't know. I have no idea. But the point is that it came around at a time where I was, you know, doing my thing. I was doing recovery. I was showing up. I was working the steps. And yes, was I scared the first time I met her? Absolutely. I was absolutely scared to meet her. And, but I could show up for it. I could show up because I'm a sober woman. I'm doing, you know, and I have dignity because I work a program. And so that was just another really good feel good thing that happened for me. My recovery, this time I haven't really done the service work so much, but this time I've sponsored people. Last time in recovery, I didn't sponsor people. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, you know, there's something for everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? There's something for everybody. As long as we're working the steps, as long as we have a sponsor, as long as we have a higher power in our life, as long as we're taking commitments and doing the thing, we can pretty much do whatever we want, right? This is a self-correcting program. So even if we blow it, we don't have to drink or use. We can still, you know, we can still get back on track. And so, but this time I started sponsoring people. And it's been such a beautiful experience to sponsor people. It's been such a beautiful experience to be able to sit with another woman and, you know, work the steps and read the book with her and take them through the first step and the second step and that fourth step, you know, and get on the other side of it and be with them when they're making those really, really hard amends that they have to make to people, you know. And I get to do that with women because I've done that myself, right? I've done all of the steps. I've done all of the steps, even a couple times. When I was in, when I was about 5 years sober, that sponsor that I had was fabulous, and we were really doing the deal, and we were getting along, but I was in a relationship with an active alcoholic at the time. And, you know, I tell you, you read this book, and you keep reading it, and then you're eventually going to identify with pretty much everything that's in it. Because I had never identified with Chapters of the Wise before. Ever, ever, ever. But there I am, right? I'm in a relationship with an active alcoholic. And all that stuff that it talks about, I have fear in my life, right? I'm still going to meetings. I'm secretary at meetings. I'm doing the thing. Everybody knows this other alcoholic, right? Because this alcoholic once had 24 years of sobriety. And she decided that she was going to drink again. And the thing is that she hasn't made it back. She hasn't made it back to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But when I was going through all that, when I was in the house and I didn't know if plates were going to start flying, I didn't know what I was walking into, and I had that anxiety and I had that fear, and I couldn't get a breath, you know, because I had the fear, I had the anxiety, I had all that stuff going on. And this woman came up to me and she said, "You know what? I think I can help you with this." And I said, "Okay." And so she became my sponsor, and she helped me go through that. She worked the steps with me. She never told me what to do. She never said leave. She never did any of that. But what she did was she worked the steps with me. She helped me get down to the causes and conditions, and why was it that I felt like I had to stay in that relationship? What was it, you know, why was I having to people please? Why was I having to put your well-being, why was I having to put your emotions over mine? Why was I having to do that? And I was able to get down to the causes and conditions and the fear that goes behind that, the fear of being alone, the fear of not being liked, the fear of looking stupid, the fear, all that stuff that I have, right? I was able to get down there, identify that, and I was able to move on from that relationship. It wasn't easy. It wasn't hard. We're still friends today. And, and she's still not sober, you know, but like I said, a lot of us don't make it back to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Another really, I can't even see the pop lines glare so much. Oh, there it is. Okay, great. Okay, another really nice feel-good thing is, my life goes better when I'm doing Alcoholics Anonymous. And there was a point where I didn't, you know, I wasn't really going to meetings and everything. And I decided that I was going to move to Florida. So I moved to Florida for a minute and I came back. And it didn't work out for me, but I always say that if I was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and I was doing the deal and I was going to my meetings and I was absolutely in the herd and not on the outskirts, because, you know, if you're around Alcoholics Anonymous long enough, there are going to be times when you're not necessarily in the middle of the herd. You're kind of on the outskirts a little bit. I was kind of on the outskirts a little bit, and I took off and I moved to Florida. I wasn't happy in Florida. I was only there for 6 months, and I turned around and I came back. And that was great, because when I came back, I got in the middle of the herd. And what happened, then what happened was, my husband and I, we've been together now for about 14 years, but 5 years ago, we decided to get married. And this is a little feel-good story, because who married us? Remember that guy that was wearing two sets of clothes inside and out, right? Couldn't talk, was smelly and stinky, couldn't put a sentence together, and then he became my Eskimo. And then so many years later, he was the guy that married us. And it got to be such a fabulous experience to have that, to have a wedding in Alcoholics Anonymous, to have my Eskimo up there marrying us. He knew both of us, and it was such a wonderful thing. You know, my life is... I've been in the middle of the herd for a long time, and, you know, like I said, the circumstances in my life has changed quite a bit, right? Not by virtue, but by circumstance. And so it's not by, you know, it's not by virtue necessarily that I stay sober, right? I'm not so fabulous and so great that I stay sober, but the circumstances keep me sober. The circumstances that I am in Alcoholics Anonymous and not on the outside, the circumstances that I'm actually reading the book and doing the steps, it makes a difference, right? So my circumstances are gonna, you know, come and go. Things are gonna be good, things are gonna be bad. And about a few years ago, I was in a job, and I liked the job, and I wanted to do something else. So I got another job. So that was a good circumstance. And then I lost that job. So then that was a bad circumstance. So then I said, you know what, I want to go to vet school. So that was a good circumstance. And then the lady that we were renting from, she said, I want to move back in the house. So that's a bad circumstance. So I'm bouncing back and forth, right? So then I'm like, okay, rents are crazy here in Santa Barbara. And my husband said, well, let's buy something. So then we bought a house up in Orchid. And that's a good circumstance, right? So I got to move up to Orchid. And was I afraid? Yes, I was afraid, because I had been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had been doing that. I was born and raised in Santa Barbara. My sobriety was in Santa Barbara. So coming up to Orchid was like, this was a scary thing for me. It was a scary thing. And the thing is that I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in Orchid, and they just surrounded me, and they loved me, and they welcomed me. And I am so comfortable in the meetings in in up here in North County, I'm as comfortable as I am down there. And my life is couldn't be better today. I have the best of both worlds. I work down in Santa Barbara. I'm there Monday through Thursday. I come home Thursday night and I'm at Orchid Thursday night through Sunday. Monday morning, I turn around, I go back, I go to meetings, I go to work, I do my life in Santa Barbara, I come here, I do my life in Orchid. And it's the best of both worlds. I never ever thought that when I was in Santa Barbara, right? When I moved up here, I never thought that when I was in Santa Barbara, I would be wondering what I'm missing out on in Orchid. I never imagined in a million years that would be happening. And that has happened, right? That has happened. When I'm down there, I'm wondering what I'm missing out on. I'm missing out on the fact that I can't go to Felina's meeting. You know, I'm missing out on the fact that there's things that are happening at the times when I can't be there. But the point is that I came in, they surrounded me, and I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm doing the deal in Orchid, and I'm doing the deal in Santa Barbara. So no matter what happens in our recovery, no matter what circumstances come in, that doesn't mean that we have to step out. That doesn't mean that we have to go through it alone. The best part about Alcoholics Anonymous is that we have rooms like these where we get to talk to one another. We get to hear somebody else's story. We get to understand that this person might be going through this. This person might be losing their mother. This person might be having a surgery. And when I go through those things, I can go to those people because we never have to do anything alone in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is the best part about being clean and sober. It was so isolated. I was so alone. I had nobody in my life when I was out there drinking and using both times. I come back into recovery, I start doing this thing, and I am surrounded. And people are there for me, and the best part about that is I also get to be there for other people. You know, I can't keep this thing if I'm just keeping this thing. I gotta give this thing away. And that's the wonderful thing about being in the middle of the sandwich, right? That's the one thing about having a sponsor that has a sponsor that has a sponsor, and I'm sponsoring people that sponsor. That's just how it works. That's what keeps this thing going. Because before there was this book, it was just one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. So that's the importance of Alcoholics Anonymous, is we've always got to be willing to talk to that other alcoholic, whether they're sober, whether they're not sober. We talk to those other alcoholics. And what makes that possible, what makes it possible for me to talk to another alcoholic, is that I have the book, and I have the principles, and I have a higher power, and I've worked the steps. And, you know, I have commitments, and I'm showing up. And I'm so glad that I got to show up here. I think this is such a fabulous place. I love the fellowship that goes on here. I'm very honored that I was asked to share here tonight. So thank you very much.